welcome all once again to a very special Dual World in episode 151. This week I'm only joined by Martin.
Hello.
And the reason for that is Martin has spent the past week, well, half a week or so, at GamesCon, and he's here to share all of his fantastical impressions. So we're going to do that. Before we get started, though, the only news I really wanted, there was a lot of good news that came out of GamesCon, and I think we'll do a bigger show later on, well, next week, or maybe two shows this week.
Yeah.
One I just wanted to touch on real fast, because it's the one that everybody seems to be talking about, is the Tomb Raider incident.
Yeah.
The Rise of the Tomb Raider, which was announced as an, and I believe the current phrasing is an Xbox exclusive for the fall of 2015.
Holiday 2015.
So, essentially, it is
a timed exclusive, like everything
it's
else.
It's a timed exclusive. And I don't get why this is such a big deal.
I don't know, I didn't give a shit because I didn't like, I didn't care about the last Tomb Raider.
I guess we're not the best two people to talk about it then. I've got it in the same boat. But I mean, it's not like timed exclusives are a new thing.
No.
And it's not like exclusives to a console are a new thing. It's not even a new thing for a brand that's been associated with something else to switch gears in another generation.
I guess a lot of people are just annoyed because they thought it was a real exclusive, because the language was a bit ambiguous at points from both companies, whether I mean Eidos or Square Enix and Microsoft.
Yeah,
Since the previous game and kind of all of the Tomb Raider games have been, almost all of them have been multi-platform titles.
Yeah, but I guess that's the thing. Is like I said, it's not the first time. I mean, using this generation, we've seen some of the reactions with Bayonetta, which went from a multi-platform game to a single console exclusive.
Well, some people will see the difference, right? One is Microsoft opening up the pockets and paying lots of money to have it exclusive. Bayonetta 2 is a case where the game would not exist at all if it wasn't for Nintendo.
To us, there's a difference. To most people, I've seen reactions. I don't think they care the difference. it's just like we've seen. I mean, going back, way back, the example that comes to mind was Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil was a huge franchise associated with the original PlayStation,
mm-hmm.
and then the Dreamcast got an original exclusive edition, and then the GameCube had a Resident Evil exclusive for a bit as well.
Yep.
So it's not a new concept. I just find it, and it's not even the fans' reactions, because I expect fans to react this way. If they didn't, Microsoft did a poor job.
Yep.
But it was the media reaction, where everybody was writing articles about Microsoft's big, you know, opening up their wallets, not going to do well, and why this is, you know, Angry Joe had a rant, and then people on YouTube was like, why is this terrible for the industry? And I'm like, why is this the straw that's breaking everybody's back? This isn't
I have no idea. Like I said, that game, I don't think that game's anything special in the first place. And second of all, beyond, like, the thing that people are crazy about for whatever reason about that game is, for me, it was more like, that seems like a very questionable business decision on both sides. Like, from Microsoft and from Square Enix.
I don't think it's questionable from Microsoft, especially this far out. I think they just want to say, okay, we're going. To me, what was questionable is saying it's timed exclusive. I wouldn't have announced that at all. At least not a year and a half out, because it defeats the entire purpose.
For me, it was more like thinking, hey, Square Enix wasn't happy with over 6 million sales of their previous game on multiple consoles, and now they're like, yeah, we're doing this exclusivity thing. Seems weird.
I mean, I think that's people's gut reaction, but when you think about it logically, it makes sense that if Microsoft is going to take off a burden of that, like, Microsoft already kind of said they're going to do part of the marketing, they're going to help out in the development. You know, it may not be a huge thing, but, you know, like, any type of support you can get where you don't have to put in as much money, or you don't have to do all the work up front yourself, is probably a good thing. And you, they probably don't have to waste as many resources working on, like, Tomb Raider came out on 4 or 5 different systems. They don't need to work on that. I mean, right now, I mean, they said Xbox exclusive. I think some people aren't sure if it's cross-gen or not. I don't know if they said that one way or another yet. But as of right now, 1 or 2 platforms to focus on, and then once that's done, you can have those, maybe a smaller team, focus on porting it. It's probably still more cost-effective than focusing on 2 or 3 consoles at once, and then having resources to port it again a year later. So there's a lot of things that can go, you know, there's a lot of things that could be said, and I'm not saying it's the best decision in the world, but I do, from Microsoft's point of view, I get it. From Square Enix's point of view, I kind of get it as well. They probably don't trust Eidos as much as they trust themselves. And this is, you know, they're not taking money for a Final Fantasy game because they can sell their own properties. They don't know what to do with the Western half of their company.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, overall, I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I just figured, like I said, there was a lot of major news to come out of Gamescom. I think this was the one that people talked about the most.
Yeah,
I
don't even think that should be the biggest news. There's been more interesting stuff happening.
I think the Silent Hill stuff was a much more interesting announcement. But I think, and to touch on that, just so about the announcement, I honestly don't care about Silent Hill that much, and I don't even care about the names associated with it. Not that they're bad names, they're fantastic names to have with it, but as I've said this before on this show and other shows, there's certain, like, you can have a person's name, it doesn't tell me anything they're doing with this game. Like, having Del Toro's name.
I was super excited when I saw it. I also just want to say, I think this was probably the most ingenious way to reveal a game ever.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at. I think this is a very creative way to reveal a game by actually having a game that's I'm hoping Tony is similar to what you're going to get in the final product.
Mm.
I guess we can kind of start here, even though it isn't part of your Gamescom impressions. You did get to try this out, right?
Yeah, I didn't play the whole thing because it was kind of late. It was the day before I actually went to Gamescom, so I didn't get to play the whole thing. But what it was called is they talked about having a teaser for an upcoming game called PT, made by a studio, I think the name was, what was it, like 7780 or something like that. And no one really knew what it was. They showed a quick trailer that basically only told us, yeah, this is going to be a horror game. So when you play this, what happens is it's in first person, and all you can do is walk around and look at stuff. There's specifically an option, a button press you can do to zoom in on things. So and the game kind of just evolves around this one hallway in a house. So the game begins. You go down the hallway. Nothing happens. You go into the cellar. That's it. Black screen, you start again at the beginning of the hallway. Then you play, then you walk again down the hallway. And suddenly, one of the doors is slightly open. So you go there, look into it, and suddenly some weird human appears, looks very scary, and shuts the door. And then again, you go into the cellar, and the thing starts all over again. And that goes on for a while, and you have to basically explore this hallway, and you experience different things, scary things usually. And once you get through the whole part, you actually get out of the house, basically, and then this video showed up, and was like, you see, like, this burning city, and then I think it was black screen and the name Hideo Kojima appears. Then you see a bit more of the city and the name Guillermo del Toro appears. Then you see the feet of the protagonist you played, and it zooms out and you see the whole person, and it's, what's his face?
Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl in The Walking Dead. Yeah, and it all ends with a white screen with black text on it saying Silent Hills, and then a couple of more Japanese games who are all, I think, people figured out, people from Koji Pro. So that's pretty exciting. A new Silent Hill made by Kojima and his team, Guillermo del Toro is involved. I would assume but parts of this game will be influenced from the title that Guillermo del Toro was previously supposed to be involved with, Insane. And yeah, I haven't Reeves as a main character. I guess that's fine. I don't know. That's not especially interesting to me. It's a cool thing.
Yeah, I think Reedus just kind of gets the nod from being Daryl on The Walking Dead, and I think a lot of people just find him attractive. I don't, as far as an actor, I come on The Walking Dead. As far as an actor go, I don't know if he necessarily excites me in a way that everybody else seems to be excited. But yeah, like I said, Del Toro, like, I don't know what he's doing. I mean, selfishly, the first thing I thought of when I heard his name was like, this is just going to push back my Justice League Dark movie even more. Which I'm never going to get.
I know that Del Toro is a pretty huge geek, and he also really likes video games. So what, yeah. Assume what he brings to the table is like, and we also know that Kojima is a huge film fan on the other side, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Working together, I can see how that can work out, how Guillermo del Toro can maybe bring some ideas from film and stuff like that, and try to work with Kojima to make these things possible in the game or other way around. I don't know. I can see him being pretty involved with this.
Yeah, like I said, it really depends. We'll find out more when we, I guess we'll get to the, when we get to actual details, because
yeah,
we don't know much beyond that Kojima and Del Toro and Reedus are in it, and it's Silent Hills. We don't know if it's aimed, we don't know a release window.
Nope.
We don't even know consoles it's on, other than to say it's at least on the PS4.
Yeah, at least PS4, that seems plausible.
I hope so. Microsoft might buy it as an excuse, if who knows. But yeah, those were the two big stories out of the event. There was a lot of other announcements from Sony and Microsoft, included new system SKUs and new games, but yeah, we'll cover that at a later time, because we have Martin here, and we want to get these personal details. We want to get these hands-on impressions. So let's kick it off. You spent the day, what, Wednesday morning?
I was there from Wednesday until today, actually.
Which is Saturday, yep, since we put this up on Mondays.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you want to hear about first? Nintendo?
Well, is that where you started?
Mm-hmm.
Then let's hear about Nintendo.
That was the start of my experience. I went to Nintendo. First thing I tried was Splatoon, because I was very curious about a shooter on my Nintendo. And I have to say that was probably one of the most fun games I played at the show. It's the whole thing. I mean, I don't have to explain how Splatoon works. I think at this point, most people should know, because there was more than enough footage out of
it. I mean, just as a quick primer, it's a 4-on-4 grid-based shooter. I'm going to hate myself using that term. And you don't necessarily shoot people. You spray them with ink. And it's not about killing people. It's about gaining territory with your ink coverage.
Exactly. And the first thing you notice is that the controls are incredibly tight. I tried both, playing with the sticks and with motion controls, and I was surprised how well the motion controls worked with this game. I actually played most of the time with the motion controls, and you know me, I often tell you how much I hate motion controls, so that was actually really shocking to me. And I really enjoyed how all these mechanics interacted with each other. It really didn't feel like your box standard shooter. You were like trying to paint stuff, then trying to regain ink by getting back into a squid form and moving fast around that way as well. But then enemies sometimes try to like paint parts of your ink into their color just so you get held off in your squid form, because you immediately slow down and lose ink again. It's fun that you also have like these basically ink grenades is a thing. Those can be pretty devastating in the sense that you can actually basically get killed with them, but they also paint like a huge area immediately. And yeah, it's a very quick back and forth in this game, especially since you can actually teleport to any one of your teammates on the map at any time. You see everyone on the screen you have on your gamepad, and then you just tap their name and immediately you get teleported to them. So that makes it a very quick back and forth between the two teams and trying to take the territory. So that was very enjoyable.
Okay. Good to hear. I mean, what was the setup here?
We played 4v4. They had like a real game basically going on.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else while you're at Nintendo's booth?
Next up for me was Bayonetta 2. I don't know what else to say. It ran Battle East move at 60 frames a second. It looked real good. It's more Bayonetta. And Bayonetta was really good. So
I'm just real curious. I've been curious about this because I actually like the Wii U's gamepad, but yeah. It seems like I don't necessarily know if it would translate to a game like Bayonetta. How does did you use the gamepad or did they?
I used the normal gamepad. Yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, the gamepad is nothing more than a bigger controller, right? So you had your face buttons for jumping, attacking, and the sticks I use as usual. ZL is your dodge move. ZR was, I think, the climax attack or something like that. Yeah, totally fine.
Okay, that was one of my chief concerns with that, because yeah. I was wondering. I mean, I played through the entirety of Wonderful 101 with no problem, but I felt like Bayonetta might have been a. Do they have any touch controls, or is that? Oh,
no, it was just mirrored the main game.
Okay.
Screen. There's nothing going on with the gamepad otherwise.
Do they have Captain Toad there? I just want to rub that in.
They had Captain Toad there. I didn't actually play it, though.
And you won't play it this year.
Yeah.
If you're in Europe.
I also played Hyrule Warriors, which I very much enjoyed, actually. But I also like the Dynasty Warrior games. But I thought the additions of like these huge boss enemies and the items change up the gameplay quite a bit, right? How you the big bosses really feel like Zelda enemies, in the sense that when you have like the King Dodongo and you actually have to watch out for his attacks, and then once he opens his mouth, you throw the bombs in to expose his weak spot, and then you can attack that, and all that mixed together with the usual Dynasty Warrior stuff, where you have to actually defeat these big armies and gain territory and do the whole mission. Actually, was surprised also how well it ran, even with lots of enemies on the screen. It ran really well on the Wii U. I don't think it was 60. But I didn't notice like any like
major
slowdowns or anything. So that's also pretty positive to say. Also, I think it might be one of the best looking Dynasty Warrior games basically at this point. I think they use the Zelda stuff really well to make it look pretty.
Okay.
And the last thing in Nintendo was Smash Bros. What I did was I played like 4 games, I think, with 4 players, and tried to test out mostly just the new characters. I didn't get through all of them. So I played Mega Man, Greninja, Little Mac, and what was the 4th one? Not Rosalina. I tried... Shit, I forgot.
It must have been a memorable character.
No, Wii there are so many new characters, that's the problem.
Wii Fit Trainer?
Yeah, Wii Fit Trainer. That was the 4th one. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about the most interesting ones, I think. Mega Man?
Just as a rogue, I assume this is the Wii U version, but I just want to make sure we're...
It was the Wii U version. The 3DS version was also there, which was totally fine, just as a lot of people have said before. Once people get too far out from each other, and it zooms out quite a lot, it's hard to see your characters on the smaller screen, even on the XL. But that's nothing new. We heard that before from other people. So on the Wii U version, that's not an issue, of course. Mega Man, I thought, was super interesting because he's just so projectile-based and has a lot of different kinds of projectiles. So that makes him really interesting to play because you have to think way more about your spacing, I think, than maybe with some of the other characters. But I'm no professional Smash Bros. Player, so that's just my quick impressions here. So he was super fun. His final Smash is still fucking amazing with all the Mega Men showing up. I thought Little Mac is really cool because of this power charge thing, because unlike the other characters, he has this bar which basically charges up as soon as you attack other people, and then when it's full you can unleash a very powerful attack which basically knocks out anyone. But of course it's harder for a Little Mac to get in on people because he's just very close range, right? He has basically no attacks
range attacks,
of distance, right? I think the best distance attack is like when you do like a forward B attack, then he does like a jumping punch, but that's still not a huge distance you can cover. But still very interesting to play. Greninja, I had the least success with, so I'm not quite sure what to tell you about Greninja. Didn't do much for me. Didn't think he was that interesting. Wii Fit Trainer, definitely interesting. He reminded me at times that, like, I think, was it Ness that could, like, throw a projectile that actually bounced around? The baseball, right? The baseball bounced around, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, sure, we'll go with that. I'm sure we'll probably have some Smash Brothers fans right now who are upset, but yeah.
The Wii Fit Trainer basically could do like a volleyball attack, which was pretty funny because the volleyball actually is then kind of part of the stage, so you don't actually have to hit someone with it. It can like bounce off from the stage and then hit someone and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of interesting. You could probably do some pretty cool stuff with that. It has some very funny animations, I thought. But that also was one of those characters I had kind of trouble playing with. Wasn't as easy to get into, so I can't get too much in depth here, I think. But yeah, really fun. It looks really good, I have to say. These character models are very detailed. So.
And I assume you couldn't get them to kind of mention any type of release date other than holiday 2014.
No, nothing. Nothing. Sadly not.
Okay, so who did you check out after Nintendo?
After Nintendo was, well, they were like on Wednesday and today, but let's talk about them in the block, was Paradox Interactive, the Swedish indie publisher. They also had one announcement to make during the Sony press conference, where they announced that Rune Master, their RPG, is no longer just a PC title, but now also coming to PS4. And the build they showed me was an alpha build, and it was running on a PC, but they already used the PS4 gamepad for the whole thing, so that already filled me with confidence that this game is totally going to work with that. And that game looks really cool. I mean, so basically it's an RPG, but it's made by the people who made like games like Crusader Kings, but they go pretty old school with it. So you have an open world. It's all based on Norse mythology. So you can actually also like change like between the different planes you have. Like if you watch like the four films, you know, like there's Midgard, there's Niflheim and stuff like that. So you can actually change between all these planes, and they all look different, and they are open to you, and they have cities there where you can get quests. And that was one of the most interesting parts. They have a randomized world and randomized quests, which I thought was pretty cool. So you have a main story, but where quests appear, what quests appear, will change from playthrough to playthrough. And it also depends on how you react to specific quests. So, when you have to make decisions and stuff, that can also then change what quests will later appear in that game.
That's for side quests, though, not like story quests. Like, the game
Even very important quests can change quite a bit. They actually showed me something like that. So
I don't know, that seems more trouble than it's worth.
I don't know, I thought it sounds very interesting. So you basically have this open world to walk around, and once you get into a battle, you may actually have like a turn-based battle, but it's not in the sense like of a Final Fantasy or something. It's grid-based, actually hex-based. It's a hex-based battle system that's also turn-based. And
explain.
Okay, explain. You have your map. It's dozens of hexes. You have your hero, who's one of the units. And you can also actually recruit other people and units that fight with you. So you don't just have a one-on-one battles or three-on-three battles, but they can get pretty big, like 10 versus 10 or something like that. And you can, for example, have your main hero, you can have some archers, some swordsmen, and then you just do stuff like, yeah, these archers can move two spots, so you can move into hexes, but then they can no longer shoot, and stuff like that. Or you can use your archers to maybe whittle some of the enemy swordsmen down before they get to you, and then you attack with your own swordsmen, and then attack that way. But since it's an RPG, all the units and your own hero can level up. They have different abilities that they can use. And because of that, it's actually quite tactical. The other thing I was very impressed by was the dialogue system, because I think I talked before on the podcast how I don't really like how Mass Effect handles dialogue and Dragon Age 2. The dialogue wheel is basically, I mean, most of the time it's just decide between good and evil and neutral. So it might as well be a binary choice, which to me is not that interesting. And this game goes back to like the older Infinity Engine games, like in Baldur's Gate. So you have like a bunch of different possible things you can choose from when you talk to people or make decisions. And if they do the right thing of not actually exposing to you what these decisions will do. So, in the sense of, like, hey, if you choose this, you will get 2 evil points, right? I don't think that's fun. You should decide yourself and roleplay in a way like, oh yeah, I want my character to be like this, so my character should decide to, I don't know, don't give this beggar any money. And the interesting part of these decisions and these dialogues is that your character actually has traits. And depending on how you react, these traits can go in different directions. So the one trait is, for example, Silver Tongue. And that can change, depending on your decisions, you can be more of a manipulative player, character. Or you can be more of a, let's say, diplomatic character. And that's how a lot of things work in this game.
You know, I actually never thought, because whenever you hear somebody has a silver tongue, they have a gift for gab. I never thought that it really can mean that they are both a politician has a silver tongue.
Yeah, I know. But that's how they named the trait itself.
I don't know, I get the trait, but I was going to say, I never thought of it as something that is both a good, because, you know, you can use it to manipulate people if you want to talk to them, and that is a silver tongue. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Like, do you control it, or do you invest into the trait?
Traits change depending on your decisions you make in the game, during quests, or how you react depending on what people are telling you. So it's not something you have that direct of an influence to. But they told me, like, it's supposed to tie into the whole role-playing aspect, right? If you're, for example, they had, like, a quest where you were asked to kill someone, and then you met the wife of that person, and the wife told you, oh no, he just stole the bread or whatever because we were so poor and stuff. And then you could say, like, okay, stop with that. I will tell them I killed your husband and we're done here, right? So that's kind of like a choice of being then manipulative in a way. So so that would then get the trade into that direction. But decisions cannot just influence one trade. They can influence multiple trades at any point, right? So one decision could mean, like, yeah, you get points into manipulative, but also points into being more stealthy, I think, was one of the things.
How would that work?
What you mean, how would it work?
I guess, like, how your decision affects how stealthy you are.
That was just, one of the traits I remembered. There were, like, 6 different traits. I couldn't write them all down. I'm sorry.
Okay. I was just like, oh, he has a sharp tongue. He must be stealthy.
No. But those two don't necessarily have to correlate. It's just it's just that a decision can influence multiple traits at once, in negative or positive way. And that game, like I said, it's coming out on all platforms, like now PS4, PC, Mac, and Linux. And the idea is to have it out early next year. Yeah, that was Room Master. The next game I saw was Magicka 2. For those who don't know, Magicka 2 was a pretty funny, like, co-op action game where you could play with up to 4 wizards and go on a silly adventure. And the whole big deal about the game was that you could create your spells by combining different elements. So you have, like, 8 elements, like fire, water, earth, cold, arcane, life, I think was also one of them, lightning, and stuff like that. And depending on the combinations you put in on PC, for instance, that it was only PC titles, so you, on your keyboard you could put in, like, I don't know, fire, earth, and what would mean it's a more powerful fireball. And what they did is they're now also putting that on PS4. And what they do is, how they make it work on the gamepad, I actually played it on the gamepad already, is they basically assign the 4 face buttons to 4 elements. And then you can press... I think it was R1, and then your 4 face buttons change to the other 4 elements. So that way, it's, even though the gamepad's super fast to combine these elements and shoot out all your spells, so you basically just use your right stick, press that into any direction if you put in a couple of elements, and you shoot the spell. If you press R2, you use the spell on yourself. If you press L2, you do it as an area of effect around you. So that worked really well. And further now, what they want to improve is, since the first game had a couple of problems with the netcode, they're really working hard on the netcode to get it to run over the internet with 4 people, no matter which platform you're playing on. You will also be able, of course, to play with 4 people locally. They still have friendly fire in, so you can kill your friends in funny ways.
Always a good thing to have.
Yeah, that was one of the big appeals of the first game. It's a very silly game. And what they are very proud of adding is, like, they have, like, this artifact system which kind of works like some like these what were they called in Bastion. You could at any point like have these things that influenced your game, like you could make your game harder in a way, like give your enemies double health and or make them hit harder and stuff like that. That's something that this game will have. They call them artifacts. You find them in the world. At this point, it's not final. They don't know. You can change them at any point to make your game harder or easier or stuff like that. But they also want to do put in like silly things. At this point, they, for example, have an artifact that they call sitcom. So you basically get sitcom laughter and applause during your game. If you want to,
that is a interesting trade.
Yeah. That was we played it like with three players the demo, and that game is a lot of fun, I have to say, in co-op. And yeah, we killed us a couple of times, but yeah, that's I think that's the appeal, right? You get at some point you get through those fights, but on the way you kill each other. By accident, or sometimes not so much by accident, and have lots of fun.
Get a round of applause.
Yeah. Or laughter.
Or laughter.
And the last game I can talk about from Paradox, but I don't think I will talk about that a lot right now because it's a super complex game. It's Hearts of Iron 4. It's their grand strategy World War II game. I just want to talk about one of the most interesting parts, because that game is basically, most of the time you look at the map and you know where your units are and stuff like that, and you make some political decisions. So there's not much visually going on, right? But what I thought was interesting is, usually these kinds of games, you do a lot of micromanaging, right? You have, like, I don't know, 5 panzer units, and you move them from one territory to the next to attack or to defend and stuff like that. But what they now have is, you can basically select a bunch of units, say, these are now an army. Then you give that army a commander. That commander can have different traits. He can be specific, technical or very aggressive and stuff like that. And then once you did that, you can give this army commands, but not like usually would, like just clicking on a field on the map and they walk there, over there, or attack something. You basically have a brush tool, which I thought was super interesting. You could like, say like, pick a defensive brush, and then what he showed me was like, okay, now we take this defensive brush and brush around the eastern border of Germany. And then all the units moved up to the eastern border of Germany and separated themselves in the way, so the whole border is basically defended. You didn't really have to do any micromanaging yourself. Then the next step was attacking Poland. So he wanted to make a plan to attack Warsaw, and what he thought what would be nice to go through the middle, then swing around from the top and swing around from the south. And then you basically, again, use a brush tool, and all you do is like drawing arrows on the map the way you want them to go, and then the commander automatically assigned a couple of divisions to all of these, and then you just unpause the game, say execute, and the commander will do the thing for you. That takes a lot of micromanaging away and still allows you to have lots of control over how you do all these different strategic maneuvers. I thought that was very interesting. I have not seen anything like that in a game before.
And it sounds really interesting, especially for somebody like myself who's kind of always intimidated by getting into these games.
Yeah. And one thing related to that, which I thought was cool, is since you always have to execute a plan, that's basically a separate button. You just can just pre-plan, basically. There are also spies. And if spies can actually find your plans. So, for example, if you actually find a plan from even an AI player or a real player, if you play online, then you would basically see these plans that they have created on the map, and then you can could act accordingly. I thought that was also pretty cool. Okay. Yeah, that's also supposed to come out early 2015 at this point. Then, what else was interesting? Indie Booth would be next. I played Hotline Miami 2 again. I played it last year, but game's still not out, so it was there again.
Yeah, I don't want to reiterate our running joke on indie games from release dates, but you kind of get the idea by now. They take this with time.
Yeah, but the cool thing was now they had more music in, which important part of Hotline Miami. And the music, again, really fucking good. So that will be exciting. And they showed off new characters, because they now have way more characters you can play. There are a couple
characters are a mask.
Well, you pick a mask, but that sometimes they call them characters, because for them the mask is basically a different character.
Okay.
So one guy I thought was interesting, the developer told me, so if you pick this mask, you will have a chainsaw attack on the left click and a machine gun attack on the right click. You're basically dual wielding, right? So if I would have one character. But actually, when you get into the map, there are two characters running around. You control one of them, the one with the chainsaw, and the other one just walks behind you. And when you shoot, the guy behind you basically shoots in the direction you want to shoot. And if you do a melee attack, the main character basically does the chainsaw attack. And chainsaw attack, super devastating, you use it just one swipe and you cut the head off or something like that. The game is just even more brutal than the first game. Now heads are rolling around and stuff like that. Also, what was interesting with that character is that you don't have unlimited ammunition for the shooting. So the second character can actually run out of ammunition, but if you walk like around weapons, he will automatically pick up a weapon and then use that one. So it didn't feel like normal dual wielding. It had a different feel to it because of that, because it was split between two characters. Another one I tried out was the one where you basically one hit kill anyone. So you could only punch, could not pick up any weapon. That was also pretty fun. And the last one I tried was someone with like dual Uzis. It was also kind of interesting. So awesome. You start dual Uzis and can just and you can actually shoot. It can actually shoot in two different directions.
Nice, reminds me of Time Fitters.
And there were multiple levels, but I couldn't even beat the one. It's pretty hard. I mean, Hotline Miami is kind of a hard game, and I mean, not too hard. It's kind of actually kind of puzzly, right? You figure it out over time.
Yeah.
Then the other game there I saw was, which I thought was really cool, was Not a Hero, which is done by Roll7, the guys that did Olly Olly. And this game also has like a very nice 2D art style, and kind of reminds me, not a negative way, so I even told the developers that don't take this the wrong way, but your art style reminds me of like early 90s like, you know, like the really first Duke Nukem games, for example, not the first person shooter one. What the game is, it's a side-scrolling 2D game that's a combination of Gears of War and Max Payne. So you have very few buttons. You just move left to right. You can reload, shoot, and slide. That's the only three things you can do. So And then they put you into scenarios where you have to get in different buildings. You can jump through windows. Well, you couldn't really jump. You basically slide through windows. When you slide, you get into cover. You can shoot from cover at the enemies. There are different kinds of enemies. Some are really tough. Some are kind of weak. So you can actually slide into them and then execute them once they're on the floor. You have different weapon pickups. Then you can throw grenades or plant bombs. There was a suicide kitten. which was basically what it sounds like. You throw out a kitten and it walks to the enemies, and then it can blow up the whole floor because of a very big bomb attached to its back. And yeah, it has this really nice flow to it. Like when you play Gears of War, right? You have this really cool flow. You get into cover, then you shoot a bit, then you try to get out, maybe do a melee attack and stuff like that. And basically, it's this really cool in a 2D side-scrolling way. And it also seems to be pretty funny because you get a job from a time-traveling rabbit.
And wait, did you say time-traveling rabbit?
Yeah, it was a big pink time-traveling rabbit that's trying to get off the in the past. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the story.
Okay. Yeah. I'll go with it.
Different characters as well. You have like different achievements in the map, like only use so many shots or kill an enemy in this way, and stuff like that. And that way you will also get like different ratings, and then you can unlock different characters that have different abilities and use different weapons as well. Also, one of what was interesting about the reload though is that they actually have manual reloads, so it's a very conscious decision to reload. It takes probably longer than you would usually think in such a game. And also, once you run out of ammo, you don't automatically reload. So it's a very important mechanic for them, and it also figures into the weapon pick and explosive ammo. What once you reload, should you, for example, not empty your whole clip, you lose the explosive ammunition. So that actually figures into the whole mechanic. So that was a super fun game, I thought. I might have even enjoyed it more than Hotline Miami 2, but that might just be because at this point it's kind of a known factor. Yeah, moving on. Then there was... what was the other game I saw there? Breach and Clear Deadline. That is from a guy who previously made the game Breach and Clear, which was like a tactical anti-terror game. Like, you could like give your anti-terror team like turn-based orders. Not really turn-based. You gave them orders, and then you unpause, and then they execute them, and you try to get rid of the terrorists, right? So, Breach and Clear Deadline, the twist is you no longer fight against terrorists, but against monsters. But still with basically military units. And you no longer just do turn-based, but in real time. But not just real time. They go the route of you have direct control over your unit. You can shoot around, kind of like dual six shooter-ish, but with your whole unit. But at any point you can pause and then give your different team members like up to 3 commands. Then you can say like, okay, you walk over here, then you throw a grenade, then this guy goes over there and you give suppressive fire and stuff like that. And that's actually, although you're still fighting against monsters, it's like they're monsters, zombies, I mean, they're like like these guys who would rush you. Then you can also come across like human enemies and stuff like that. So actually using that tactical stuff will still be quite important. So I thought this also looked quite interesting, and they are going into early access end of the year. So maybe I will try to check it out once that's in early access. What's next? What should we talk about next?
What is next? Is that all you did at the indie booth?
That was basically all I did at the indie booth, yeah. That was almost all on Wednesday. I just said two more games on Wednesday. Maybe we should talk about these.
Yeah, just real quick. I'm really, the indie booth itself. Is it just, like, games without a country? Like, they aren't a major publisher? So they just, it's kind of like...
Yeah, they were, like, under one PR firm, right? They had, like... Some of those games already have a publisher with Devolver Digital, right? That's Hotline Miami, for example, is Devolver Digital. Not a Hero is Devolver Digital, but Breach and Clear, for example, wasn't. It was a PR film that's basically just made all these appointments for them and got the space for them and stuff like that.
Okay.
The next up was Mortal Kombat X.
Mortal Kombat!
Exactly, and fucking hell, that game is amazing. I wish I could have played more of it. I already loved how they introduced one new character, which is a returning cast member with Kano. Like everyone else, he has three different styles, but I think he might be one of those who changes more than others. Because he had, like, one style that's more, like, focused on his knives, then one style that's uses more cybernetics, so you use more of your eye laser shooting things. And the last style is actually basically makes Kano a grappler, and you focus more on actually having counter moves and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. And after they introduced Kano to us, they showed us, like, a nice montage of fatalities and X-ray moves. Fucking hell, that game is brutal.
I'm surprised that Mortal Kombat is brutal. I've always thought it was such a friendly little game.
And that was the first time I saw... you probably heard of the Scorpion fatality before, like, when he cuts off the front of the face. I now finally saw it. Man, it's disgusting. There's these scorpion flames out the chest of his enemy, the heart pops out, the enemy goes to his knees, then scorpion takes out his sword, and then cuts off the front of the face, and then the brain slides out of the brain cavity, and the tongue is slightly cut off and flops around. It's
that
super
sounds,
disgusting.
Yeah, that sounds a bit overkill.
So, they're going places with this game. But yeah, after that, I actually got to play the game, I think probably for like 50 minutes. I got to play a couple of matches. I tried, for example, Cassie Cage, which is like the daughter of Johnny Cage. Oops.
Yeah, I'm about to say you, Cage.
No. Johnny Cage and Sonya. And I thought they did a really good thing with her. They don't specifically give her moves from these characters, but they try to, like, combine elements, really, from her parents. Like, she has these green moves that Johnny Cage has, but... They combine that with, like, these up kicks from Sonya, or they actually give her also, like, a gun attack. Or her X-ray move, for example, is the nut punch. But she just doesn't punch the nuts. She actually squeezes the nuts until they explode.
Okay, then.
was a really fun character to play, by the way. I also
that she inherited her father's traits, I guess.
Yeah. Then what else did I try? I tried Kano. Kano was super fun with his cybernetics. The grappling was not as easy because demo environment, right? You don't know the moves immediately. I always looked them up at the start of the match, but sometimes, you know, it's not... You need a couple of rounds to get really into the stuff like that. But it's pretty interesting. I also tried Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero is really cool in this title as well, I think. Some of the variations, like when you can now actually throw your ice clone, right? Previously you just could create your ice clone, and if your opponent touches it, he freezes. But now you have one move where you can actually just pick your ice clone up and throw him at your enemy, and freeze your enemy that way as well, which is pretty funny. And then I played a bunch of Scorpion as well, and he's basically Scorpion, right? Scorpion didn't change that much. Also, I have to say, already it ran really well at 60 frames per second, and they, at this point, don't have a release date. All they're saying is 2015. I would assume first half of 2015, but even if it's later, I'm really impressed with how it runs, and especially on looks. I think on streams, it doesn't really come across how much detail there is in these stages and on these characters, like especially how their look basically degrades over time when they fight, and how much improved their animations actually are. Because I know a lot of people have been complaining over the years about Mortal Kombat animations, and I completely understand. I didn't think it was that bad MK9, but people were still complaining. I don't think we will hear these complaints with Mortal Kombat X, because these animations are great, and they totally rival, like, the Japanese fighting games at this point. So, yeah, I think this game will probably be pretty awesome.
Okay. And what else did you see on Wednesday?
The next thing was my last WB appointment at that day, and that was Batman Arkham Knight. Which, first of all, fucking hell, this game is beautiful. I came into this demo, and first I watched someone play, and didn't even realize I was standing right next to one of the developers, and said, like, man, this model looks beautiful. I was talking about the Batman model, how detailed it was, and the developer next to me was actually one of the guys who worked on my model and said, oh, thank you. Me and these other two guys actually worked on it. So we had three guys just modeling and texturing Batman. So you can imagine how much work actually went into him. But they didn't just work on one guy, they also worked on, like, Commissioner Gordon and stuff like that, and Scarecrow, I think. But yeah, these models are just gorgeous, they look great, they animate well. So that part of the game, amazing. I got to try out the Batmobile, of course, which is, I guess, the biggest addition in this title. And the demo I had to get into Ace Chemical to rescue some hostages, and there was, like, first you had to get into Ace, so you could, like, prop up the wall with your hook shot, not the wall, the street was, like, collapsed at some point, and you try to prop it up in a way so then you could, like, jump over into the Ace Chemical plant with your Batmobile. Then you could get into, like, this battle mode, which basically controls like a tank. And then I had to fight these weird machine things. I'm not sure what they were called. You basically shoot them, like, with a machine gun, but it's, I think, some kind of electric shot. And they have, like, basically, like, in the normal hand-to-hand combat, you basically build up a combo, and once you build up a combo, you could do, like, a rocket attack, a very strong attack, to basically take on enemy immediately. While not the most amazing game, I thought, it was still pretty fun. It didn't distract or anything, mostly because it controlled very fluently and in a fun way. If you played, for example, the Transformers games that High Moon did, when you went into, like, a vehicle mode, it controlled a lot like that. And then what they also showed was lots of interaction, like, between Batman and Batmobile. Of course, I tried out, like, jumping out of it to get to a higher spot. What's also really fun is you can call the Batmobile at any point to you, no matter where you are, and then you can see it like driving to you, which is pretty fun. Then they had like stuff like, okay, with Batman, I had to fight a couple of goons in a hallway. Then my way was actually not blocked, but I couldn't get to the elevator, right? So what I had to do was then get into remote control mode for my Batmobile, shoot through the wall, then use the hook shot on the elevator to then basically lift the elevator up for Batman, then get back to Batman, get Batman into the elevator, and then slowly get Batman down. So there are a lot of these small puzzles that they're doing, mostly environmental, in which you then can have to basically help yourself out in a way to progress through the, well, not level, but through this part of the city. I think you wanted to ask something.
I guess to me it's still about the Batmobile, the driving. I know that you said you had fun with it and it works and it wasn't too distracting.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it still seems, not so much the driving part, but like when you engage in battle mode,
yeah,
when it kind of turns into a weird third-person shooter, that still seems to be the part of the game that I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around. Because it doesn't look like it controls like a well third-person shooter.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You said you're okay with the controls. But did you get get the idea, or did you hear from anybody that's a big part of the game, or does that seem like it's going to be a minor part of the game?
During my demo, it was a really long demo. In the 30 minutes I played, I didn't even get to finish it. I had two encounters where I actually had to fight with the Batmobile, if that answers your question.
Okay, that doesn't fill me with confidence then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell you how it's going to be in the full game. And the other really new thing that I encountered was the environmental takedowns that you now have. So when you're in hand-to-hand combat previously, you could like counter, there were like unblockable moves, and then there were like these moves that you could use to when you build up your combo, to take someone out immediately, right? But this time, depending on where you fight, there might be situations when you're close to something where you could actually use an environmental takedown to take someone out very quickly. So there was, for example, it's usually indicated by the enemy glowing blue. It's like, it looks like as if there's a blue shield around him, in a way. And then you press, like, X and square at the same time, I think it was. I was playing on PS4. And then, for example, Batman throws a guy into a fuse box and he gets electrocuted for a bit or something like that. And what I thought was really cool is if you place your Batmobile close to you, you can basically use your Batmobile as an environmental takedown. That, for example, Batman can throw a guy into the air, and then the the gun of a Batmobile shoots the guy into the air and takes him out that way. We should probably mention that it's not shooting bullets; it's electricity.
I was going to be my comment. It's like I love how these games are really kind of skirting around the idea that he can't kill.
Yeah,
but he can inflict a whole lot of pain, because I don't care what you're shooting. Being shot from something out of a car is going to leave a mark.
It looks like it hurts, but not that though.
Yes, they always make sure of that. They're unconscious, or they're knocked out.
They're unconscious. Yeah. But yeah, I had a little fun with them. I have to say, I don't think they changed the formula much. At least not from what I've played. Like I said, the biggest change is definitely the Batmobile. So we'll have to see how that will play out over the whole game.
I forget, did you play Origins?
No.
Okay, I was going to ask, because Origins had the power-up girls, and I assume that's not in this, because those were kind of... those kind of broke the combat, because you can get through people who had shields and tasers and other stuff.
No, that definitely wasn't in there.
Okay.
Right. They also had a new kind of enemy that is basically more proficient than the usual thugs, so that they have more moves. They also have a shorter counter window, so they're actually way harder to fight. So there will probably be more enemy types in the final game than previously. And one more thing that I've also really stressed, that the map you're playing, like the Gotham, is not just way larger than the previous game. I think he said 5 times. So it's not just landmass though, it also is height. So they really play up the height of Gotham. That's why they also have like a new grappling system that chain grappling is, I think, what they called it, to get you up very high buildings a bit faster.
Okay, we're gonna start wrapping.
Let me say one thing though. One more game, very shortly. Lego Batman 3, I remember it was WB.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that. I figured we'd get the Batman stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
But, Lego Batman 3, which should totally be called Justice League at this point. Gotham.
I didn't even get to see Batman in the demo. But barely. I saw some of Batman. But most of the demo they showed, they didn't use Batman at all. And the demo was also based on a Green Lantern planet. So it was entirely in space. They showed off a bit of the gameplay. I mean, it's a LEGO title. The gameplay didn't change that much. But they did show those lots of characters. They have now way more big figs in this title. Like, I think Solomon Grundy was in Killer Croc. Martian Manhunter can actually transform himself into a big fig. Frankenstein is in, which was really weird. Would not expect them to put Frankenstein in. Then they had what's another weird thing? Right, I was super surprised as well. They already had Dick Grayson in as the secret agent, which I think happened in the comics like last month or something.
Yeah, it is one issue. That is really quick.
Yeah, they already have that in. Then they showed off like a couple of the suits, because a lot of characters have like different suits. For example, Cyborg had like suits for different things. Like, he had like a magnet suit, then he had a stealth suit, and that gives you, of course, different abilities, and also changes the way the character looks. A stealth suit was incredibly great, because that just turned Cyborg into a washing machine, and the head was basically in the washer, and just turning the whole time. I thought it was pretty funny.
Did you get a chance to play as Bat-Cow or Crypto?
No, I didn't actually get to play. It was just, they just showed it. They had a playable on the show floor, but there were so many people that would have been an issue. But they showed Bat-Cow. Bat-Cow is pretty funny. They also showed Crypto the dog, who also has the eye lasers, if you wanted to ask, and can fly. Of course. They also have, because they didn't show it playable, but you had to rescue a blue lantern in the mission they showed, so I would assume they probably have a couple of more lanterns in the final game. And they have different Batman variations, which I thought was cool. So you have your main Batman, which is different suits, that's fine. They also had Batman of Amun-Zur? Amun-Zar?
Yes. No, isn't it Batman of Zara? And it's the multicolored one, right? Like the
exactly. Red.
Yeah, it's his ultimate defense force. It's like he's been broken, and this is like his alternate. Like, he doesn't get broken. It's a new form of Batman that he creates.
That Batman was also in there, and what will probably make you very happy, they have Batman 1966 in there.
Yes, which is a bonus mission after the game.
Exactly, and they showed us that mission. And that mission is quite amazing, with lots of fun dialogue, breaking the fourth wall. Once you actually play Batman 1966, when you hit something, you have all the sound words popping up as well. Like boom, crash, stuff like that. And they also have Adam West as a character in there. So you can actually just play as Adam West. If you want to.
which I know, but I also hate, because I think he's the OU one. Like, I don't think there's, like, a Ben Affleck or there's a...
It's just Adam West, yeah. Because Adam West is also voicing...
Adam West.
And yeah, I also think just Batman 66 is probably also voiced by Adam West.
Yeah.
So, also, of course, you also get the appropriate Robin for the time.
Yes, did they go into the voice cast at all, or no?
Oh, yeah, I'm so bad with names, though, that's the issue. They have a bunch of very popular voice actors in there, definitely. Batman, for example, as the rumor is voiced by Troy Baker, who's known everything, but yeah.
Yes, who's also cheating, because he gets to be the Joker and Batman in terms of franchises.
That's true.
But
yeah, that game looked super fun. Really looking forward to it at this point.
And that is out October?
October, I think. End of October. October 28th for you, I think October 31st for us, if I'm not mistaken. As I mentioned, if you pre-order, you get a Plastic Man minifigure. Actually, Lego minifigure. And that's, at this point, the only way you can get that minifigure. For a Lego collector like me, that's a big deal.
and that's the type of pre-order bonuses that I'm okay with, because it doesn't take anything away from the actual game.
And it's just a cool thing to have.
Yeah.
Because these minifigs are really cute.
Yeah, not minifigs. What were they called? Hero Clicks?
There are Hero Clicks. That exists. That's a thing, yeah.
Yeah, I used to collect those. I have a few of them.
Yeah.
But, anyhow, we're going to wrap Parshi because we are over an hour and he still has 2 days of games to talk about.
Yeah, but the last 2 days were shorter, so not as much.
Yeah, and we'll probably just break those up into separate videos throughout the week to give his impressions on that. I'm Parshi because I actually have to go. And so I want to thank Martin and his tremendous time at Gamescom. We'll be back later this week with more on his thoughts.
Yeah.